Chapter 3. Lord Celestant Tylos Stormbound. Duty keeps me sane. I will not let my brothers die. I haul myself down the chain and step onto the bridge, ignoring the pain, the screams, and the madness of the storm. I drive down my anger and level my thoughts. I study the fastening around my leg and see that the Blood Reavers have designed them for a specific purpose, so that they might travel through the lunar storm. This must be something they endure regularly, and it must therefore be something that passes. I look up at the moon and see that it's already swinging back up towards the stars. We will ride this out. We will sanctify the Crucible of Blood. I fasten the chain tighter and stagger across the lurching bridge, barging between crowds of tumbling bodies. I grab those I can, fixing them to the structure, while crushing those in red with grease until they are as broken as the birds. It's hard to fight cleanly in this madness, but I refuse to slip into brutality. I'm no longer the animal Sigmar lifted from the slave pits. I'm a good man, a devout man. Every kill I make is in Sigmar's name. My men follow my lead, and soon we're on the attack again, bloody and shackled, but twice as determined. The laughter of our foes ceases as they find themselves once more facing a wall of hammer-emblazoned shields. I doubt we look as glorious as when we arrived, but I'm sure we are more terrifying. Drusus and his men loop through the night sky, supporting our advance, hurling Sigmar's twin-tailed judgment. The Blood Reavers fight on. They can't hope to win, but the pitiful few that remain throw themselves at us, fueled by a senseless kill fever, thrashing and hacking as we trample them. The final push is over in minutes. The storm is definitely fading now, and the bridge becomes calm. Eventually the moon is high enough that we can smash our chains and charge, finishing the Blood Reavers in a silent, efficient slaughter. I grab the last of them by the throat and drag him to the edge of the bridge. He kicks as I hold him out into the night, studying him with silent dispassion. He stops struggling and spits on my mask, his phlegm sizzling angrily on the metal, and stares at the blood flowing from the eye hole of my mask.
"Blood for the Blood God!"
he starts laughing. I remain silent. The Blood Reaver's eyes become lucid, and I am pleased to see that I have confused him. He continues to laugh, but it sounds forced. He strains to free himself whilst staring at my mask, trying to see what lies behind. There was a time when I would have crushed him just to see his pain, to see him beg for mercy. But I stay my hand. I am no longer that man. I brought the Blood Reaver out here to denounce him, to list his crimes and vent my rage. But now I realize that would be as clumsy as revealing my face. I drop him from the bridge. As the Blood Reaver falls from view, the insanity of this place hits me. I know the name of this kingdom, the Carval Steppe, but little else. I had assumed that the bridge spanned a great river, but the thundering noise I can hear is coming from something far stranger. Below us is an ocean of black fire, boiling with tormented creatures. I have no doubt that this place was once magnificent, but now it's a monstrous sight. I look down on a frenzied tsunami of reptiles, mammals, and crustaceans, bound together by flames and ash, tumbling and rolling over each other in a furious rush to escape the heat. Some of the scorched creatures resemble things I can recognize, but others have been warped into lunatic creations of horn and scale. The moon paints them red, a torrent of claws and blood. Boreas's cool tones interrupt my thoughts. He has left the other commanders behind and followed me to the edge of the bridge. Now that we are alone, he finally drops my title.
Your first taste of victory, brother.
Victory isn't enough, I reply. You know that. If we're to win the wider war, we must be a beacon. We must ignite these realms, not with flames, but with hope. Vandus's victory at the Igneous Gate has brought us passage this far. But we have to be worthy of him. We must show the people of this land what they can be. I draw back my shoulders and take a deep breath. We must show them how to be stronger. Better. Boreas glances back across the bridge.
60 liberators are gone,
he says, with no trace of emotion. I look past him and see the truth of it. Of those that remain, many have dark stains on their golden armor.
The pull of the moon,
he explains.
I can do nothing for them. They will endure hours of agony before their souls can return to the celestial realm.
I look up at the sky. Which of those lights are not stars but men, screaming as they drift into the lonely void? I turn to Boreas, wondering what kind of man he is now. We have shared so much, and yet I feel like he is a stranger. Where has he travelled in Sigmar's name? Every inch of his golden armour is draped in talismans. Skulls, bones, and scrolls, all inscribed with tales of the underworlds. There is a grandeur to him that I don't recognise. And a coldness.
The scholars of the Celestial City did not foresee this, he says. I did not foresee it. The storm should have landed us inside Hach's kingdom, at the foot of the Crucible of Blood. Instead, it brought us here, to the Red Road.
His words trail off and he shakes his head. When he speaks again, his voice is so soft that I can barely hear him.
Dawn will soon be here, and there are now many challenges between us and victory. Hach's realm is encircled by a great fortress known as the Anvil. My visions...
Brother, I interrupt. There are no walls tall enough to stop this army, you know that. It doesn't matter where we've landed. Sigmar will not abandon us. We will reach the Crucible of Blood. He nods.
I just want you to know what lies ahead. After the Anvil, we will reach Lake Malice, a mile-wide stretch of lava. Our souls may be immortal, but our flesh is not. You will need to find a way across that liquid inferno.
Then we have little time. How fast can we reach the Crucible of Blood?
If we follow the road for another mile or so past the bridge's end, we'll reach the Anvil. Lake Malice is not much further from there. If we can find a way across, the Crucible of Blood will be in sight.
How long before the sun rises?
Maybe as little as 3 hours.
He looks up, and I find myself trying to discern the eyes behind his skull mask. There's something strange about the colour. Or maybe it's the absence of colour. I step closer, intrigued.
If the sun rises before we capture the Crucible, even Sigmar can't help us,
he says, turning to the horizon. Then 3 hours will have to suffice, I say. Do you still have our key? I glance at the collection of relics that adorn his armour. Is it intact? He takes a heavily bolted box from his belt and opens it with a muttered prayer. Then he lifts out a fume-filled bell jar. The opaque green glass is thicker than my shield and locked to a silver base by a row of filigreed clasps. The jar is beautiful, in stark contrast to the contents. As Boreas lifts the glass from its base, a cloud of mist drifts away to reveal a shriveled black heart. The Curiat, ancient beyond imagining. A living fossil from another age, still beating with a steady, unceasing thud. Tiny lights flutter around it, golden motes that dance and sparkle as Boreas holds the relic up in front of his mask to study its rhythm.
The Curiat has already slowed, he mutters. The radiant storms have been cast astray. Something has perverted the will of the Celestial City. Or someone, perhaps.
He glances at me, then looks down again. The golden lights billow and roll, forming symbols under his fathomless gaze. He reads something in the tiny constellations and nods, before closing the jar and locking it carefully away again.
The Curiat is still true. Its potential is undimmed. If we bring it to the Crucible of Blood, Khorne's legions will find that a new power has dominion over their prized realm kit.
He notices the crimson smear across my metal mask.
You're wounded. Let me see.
I remove my helmet and allow him to examine my eye. Pain explodes across my face as he touches me, but I consider it just penance for being so careless. How absurd to have been injured in my first battle.
The eye is punctured,
he says, a hint of humanity in his voice, a hint of my brother.
And the cut is messy. I'll need to mend the wound as best I can to avoid infection.
I try to shrug him off, impatient to move on, but he points at the madness below.
Lord Celestant, this is not a place to be careless, and your life is too precious to be taken lightly. Your soul may survive a corrupted wound, but your flesh will not, and I do not intend to lead this army in your stead.
I loosen my grip on his arm. Then work quickly, brother. He takes an object from his armor and presses it to my face. Something plunges deep into my eye socket.
The pain doubles, and fresh blood pours down my face. Then the world turns crimson.
I struggle to see what my brother does next. He chants in a language I've never heard before, and the words sound furious and alien. Then he reaches up as though trying to grasp something from the air. How long will... I start to say, when a blazing column of light slams into us. It hits me with such force that I almost topple to the ground. Only my brother's firm grip holds me upright. The air crackles with arcane power, and a sickening heat washes over me. I try to cry out, but my body is shaking so violently that I can't speak. My weapons drop to the ground, and I slump in my brother's grip. Light pours through me, cramming my consciousness with dazzling energy as the celestial majesty burns through my skull. For an agonizing, rapturous moment, I feel not Boreas's hand, but Sigmar's on my flesh. The light deepens and grows before revealing a hellish vision. Thousands of grinning cadavers rising up from a shattered wasteland. They crawl from their graves and swarm towards me, carrying ancient rusting spears. One of them is a great winged horror, and as it dives towards me, I see its bleached skull in gruesome detail. I'm about to cry out in defiance, to denounce it, when the vision vanishes, replaced by the polished skull mask of my brother's helm. The light fades and night returns. Strength floods back to my limbs, and as I look around, I see that I'm still on the bridge of birds.
You saw something, says Boreas, keeping hold of my arm. What?
I shake my head, confused. He stares at me in silence for a moment, then gives a disapproving sigh that takes me right back to our childhood.
You are doubly blessed, brother. The God King has worked a miracle through my humble flesh. I only meant to safeguard you from infection, but it looks as though Sigmar does not wish to be served by one-eyed lords.
I blink and realize that he's right. The vision has returned to my eye. As I study the storm clouds overhead, though, I feel as though I am seeing more than I should. The heavens are strangely vivid and mobile. I shake my head. We need to go. I click my mask back into place and clasp my brother's shoulder in thanks. Then we stride back across the bridge to the others. Some of them are wounded, but there's no doubt in their eyes as they see me approaching. Zarax is there, waiting patiently for my return. She looks unharmed and is scratching and pawing at the bridge, eager to carry on. Drusus lands a few feet away, and as he removes his helmet, I feel again that I'm seeing more than I did before. Now I can clearly see how the reforging has changed him. When I first met Drusus, barging his way to the front of a crowd of aspirants, he was a broken man, tormented by an illness of the mind. Now, a steady missionary zeal burns in his heart. He folds his lightning bright wings behind his back and drops to one knee. The trust in his face feels like another inch of armor across my chest.
Forgive me, Lord Celestant,
he says. As he speaks, his head twitches to one side, a ghost of his former madness, but he refuses to let his voice waver.
I will not fail you again.
True, I reply. You will not. Ranks of liberators, retributors, and judicators climb slowly to their feet. They raise their weapons in silent tribute, ready to begin again. I'm so proud I could roar. I climb onto Zarax's back and survey my incorruptible host.
Your baptism is complete,
I cry.
Prepare for war!
After half an hour's march, we leave the Bridge of Birds, and I lead the army through avenues of cloud-scraping, shattered towers. Drusus and his prosecutors glide overhead, slicing through storm-racked clouds, clutching their hammers and javelins as they search for signs of danger. From Zarax's back, I survey the lines of liberators marching ahead of me. Even their presence in this wretched place is an act of defiance. They move in flawless, perfectly symmetrical phalanxes, illustrating everything that an army should be. They're riven with faith and pride. Behind me stride the paladins, Celadon at their head, and further back march the ranks of judicators. Chaos-spawned horrors scuttle for safety as our boots crunch towards them.
Soon,
says Boreas, looking up at me. There's a trace of humour in his voice.
Soon?
He waves his hammer at the army that surrounds us.
Soon you'll have your chance to truly test them and see what Sigmar has entrusted you with. It won't be long until you can show your mettle.
I smile behind my helmet. How easily he still guesses my thoughts. I glance at the heavens, trying to discern our home in the stars. They say that when Vandus opened the Ignis Gate, the heavens cried out in gratitude. They say a chorus of lost souls sang his name. Boreas nods.
You have a lot to live up to.
We reach the plateau and leave the shadow of the towers, heading for a glittering, moonlit expanse of scorched earth that leads to endless fields of rippling grass. There's a tinkling sound on the breeze, like hundreds of tiny bells. I look back and notice that the lunacy of this place is so profound that the moon has already resumed its natural place in the night sky. Sigmar's tempest still flickers overhead, and clouds race through the darkness. Our target is clear, though. I don't need Boreas's relic to point the way. Across the fields stands a vast wall of shadow. It stretches over the horizon and flickers with crimson pinpricks of light.
The anvil, says Boreas, the border of Hark's kingdom, manned by an army to make those blood reavers look like a gathering of fishwives.
Instruct my captains, I say. Order them to spread the army out. Boreas snaps out commands to my captains, and Zarax carries me to the edge of the fields. The tinkling sound grows louder, and I realize my mistake. What I took for blades of grass are in fact real blades. We're standing before an expanse of rusting metal. Millions of swaying, broken swords, each one held erect by a rotting skeletal hand that juts out of the dusty soil. They chime gently against each other in the breeze.
What's this? I say, looking down at Boreas. In the field of blades, the last army of the Carval Steppe.
He steps closer to Zarax and looks up at me.
Khorne found their attempts to defend themselves amusing. He buried them here in mockery.
I glance back at the paladins. Do we need to clear a path?
No, Lord Celestand. There's no threat left in this army. They are simply a warning.
Not even a warning, an illustration of what happens to those who brave the anvil. He prods a sword with his hammer.
We'll pass through them easily enough.
There are so many,
says Drusus, landing a few feet away. He's right. I look out at the field of blades and attempt to estimate the size of the army that Khorne found so unworthy. There must be millions of weapons quivering in the breeze, while the anvil overlooks them all, like a sated lion.
"This must have been the greatest army that ever bore arms,"
says Drusus. I laugh and signal the advance.
"The second greatest,"